Chapter 32. While most surviving crew members of the cruiser Ruthnax Atkal panicked and generally acted in a manner unworthy of their lofty status as a senior species, the ship's AI remained cool and in control, calmly and somewhat haughtily disdaining the biological beings it served. The AI did not truly need input from its masters. It knew what to do even in the unprecedented situation of a battle with a human-controlled starship, a ship of still unknown but frighteningly impressive capabilities. The AI knew what was the best approach to the tactical situation because there was a lengthy but limited list of things it could do. Having destroyed a barrage of pathetically low-tech missiles from the human starship, the AI was confidently, if impatiently, waiting for damaged power couplings to realign so it could feed energy into the masers, particle cannons, railguns, and more exotic machines of destruction. If the AI were being honest with itself, it would have to admit many of its higher-order submines were trapped in loops that could be considered panic, except that, of course, artificial intelligences were much too disciplined to ever fall victim to a biological weakness like panic. Perhaps its submines, responsible for strategic thinking and deep analysis, were in less than optimal condition, having been rendered useless by endlessly worrying about variables they could not control. Strategic planning was impossible without complete situational awareness, the higher-order submines told their controlling intelligence, and situational awareness could not be attained without effective analysis of the data. Such analysis was impossible without data, and they simply did not have enough, really any data, on the mystery human starship that had ambushed and destroyed their companion ship. The AI listened to the complaints and anguished calls from its higher-order submines. In truth, the AI quickly slapped together a subroutine to deal with the squabbling and babbling submines to free its consciousness for useful endeavors. Yes, the subroutine told the panicked submines, I agree that we need more data. However, since we do not currently have more data and are unlikely to gather a useful and complete data set for analysis, what should the ship do in the meantime? Nothing, duh, replied the submines. How can we recommend any action without proper analysis? The subroutine sighed, commiserated with the submines, and looked forward longingly to the future time when it would be erased to end its misery. With the higher-order submines rendered ineffective and the biological crew paralyzed by waiting for their superb artificial intelligence to provide strategic guidance, the AI ironically found itself relying on lower-order submines that were barely more than subroutines, incapable of true thinking and limited to executing a pre-programmed set of instructions. Rather than being frustrated by the restricted capabilities of the tactical submines, the AI found the experience of dealing with them directly to be refreshing. They cut through all the noise and generated blessedly simple and straightforward recommendations that were clear and concise. Because we do not know the full capabilities of the mystery enemy ship, the tactical submines concluded, we must disable, or if necessary, destroy it as quickly as possible, by the most expedient means possible. Since the sensor suite that provided missile guidance was still in its way-too-lengthy process of restart and calibration, the ship should fire its particle cannons when their power relays were repaired, then the maser cannons. Those directed energy weapons should target the enemy ship's shortened spine, severing the aft engineering section from the forward crew section. The Ruthnax Atkal could then take its time disabling the defensive systems protecting the enemy ship's forward section, preparing that part of the enemy ship for boarding by bots that would seize the human crew. The more exotic weapons, such as the device that skewed spacetime, would be downgraded in priority for repair, as bringing those complicated and energy-intensive exotics online would take too long. No, the higher-order strategic submines roared as one when they heard the recommendation of their simplistic cousins. Facing an unknown threat, the Ruthnax Atkal needed its most deadly weapons available. Then, and only then, when the ship was able to protect itself, could the ship even consider cute tactics like slicing the enemy starship's spine. Again, ignoring the frightened squeals of the higher-order submines, the AI concentrated nanomachines and bots to restoring power flow to the particle cannons. By the time the strategic submines calmed down, the AI would have lanced out with the powerful particle beams, and the issue of how to deal with the enemy ship would become moot. There were only three more power relays to be repaired to bring the first particle cannon online, a task complicated by there being gaping holes in the hull between the power generators and the cannon. Irritated by the protests of the ship's maintenance AI that stretching vulnerable power relays across a gap in the ship's armor plating would be foolish, the AI directed its efforts to getting the first particle cannon online with maximum speed and minimum distractions so it could proceed with... The enemy ship fired a maser beam, the high-energy photons striking the gap in the hull plating, melting the power relays that had already been repaired, and overloading the particle cannon's capacitors, making them explode. Suddenly, there was another gap in the ship's armor plating. Having successfully knocked out the most immediate threat to themselves, the human ship shifted its maser to what the Rothnooks Otkal's AI thought a most curious target, a gap in the armor where part of the ship's main structural frames were exposed. What could the humans possibly be thinking? The AI asked itself. Then, with a chuckle of bemusement, it realized the ignorant humans must be thinking they could do to the powerful Maxulk's warship what the Rothnooks Otkal's AI had planned for the mystery ship, to cut it in half. Ha-ha, the AI laughed, startling all its subminds. This is going to be easier than expected, it assured its subminds, and passed that information to its biological masters. While the humans attempted the futile task of cutting through the tough frame of the cruiser, the AI would repair the particle cannons on the other side of the ship, then knock out the enemy maser cannon at leisure. There was some small bit of actual danger, the AI knew, for even the frame of composites and exotic materials could not long withstand the maser energy searing into it and threatening the other connecting frames that held the warship together. No matter. Protecting the frames in that area was a simple matter of returning the structural stability field that strengthened the crude material of the frames, so the AI did that. Retuning the field not only brought the targeted frame back to nearly full strength, it also deflected part of the incoming maser energy, frustrating the enemy's efforts to... the AI pondered. That was odd. The maser beam had retuned itself before the AI adjusted the frame's structural energy field to compensate. The maser beam not only was now at a different frequency, the exact frequency that canceled the field's structural stability, it was now also pulsing at the exposed frame's natural rate of resonance. The AI shrugged. So the humans got lucky. All it needed to do was retune the structural stability field to a random frequency. A frequency which the enemy maser beam had already switched to. What the hell? Switching frequencies again and again and again and again accomplished nothing. The incoming maser energy always anticipated the AI's move, even though it was switching frequencies at random without any predictable pattern. And that was even more odd and alarming. The relatively weak maser beam spread out, defocusing and nutating in a pattern that matched not only the natural resonance of the exposed structural frame, but also adjusting as the vibration effect traveled to connecting frames. Retuning the stability fields of those connecting frames only made the increasingly violent vibration worse, because the incoming maser retuned itself just before the AI acted, making the connecting frames resonate together as a unit. Still, there was no actual danger to the cruiser. The structural frames were equipped with vibration dampeners, which were crude physical devices that, despite the primitive nature of their technology, could effectively absorb vibration that could threaten the frames they were attached to. The dampeners were nothing more than a jacket around the frames, filled with energy-absorbing composite gel and spaced at critical intervals. The AI knew it could rely on... Shit! The AI shouted in its internal language. What the f... How was the dampener gel disintegrating? Somehow the human ship had tuned the pulsation of its maser beam to multiple frequencies, one of which caused the dampener gel to vibrate so rapidly it boiled and exploded, bursting free from their encasing jackets and adding to the violent shaking of the frames they were attached to. One by one, in a sequence that was almost a blur even to the cruiser's AI, vibration dampeners failed. Now, the AI realized, there was an actual danger to the cruiser. Within 3 seconds of the weak enemy maser beam striking the Rothnooks Otkal, the vibration was traveling along the vital frames in the rear section of the ship, causing backup reactors there to automatically shut down. Yet their shutdown sequence itself fed into the resonance as the reactors became less massive by venting their plasma into space. The reactors began shaking themselves apart, and that in turn caused the resonance to travel along the interwebbed set of frames that supported the jump drive capacitors. If the hellish energies in those capacitors was released in uncontrolled fashion, the ship was doomed, the AI told itself. even as every random or non-random thing it tried to counter the vibration not only failed, but somehow made the resonance effect worse. "We told you something unexpected like this could happen," its higher-order subminds replied in fatalistic smugness. "But did you listen to us?" "No, you did not, you big jerk." "How is this happening?" the now panicked AI screamed to itself. I often call Skippy an asshole, and that is usually totally justified, but sometimes I am the asshole. From his point of view, maybe I am the real asshole all the time, because what the hell was a primitive, ignorant monkey like me doing as captain of a starship? He is absolutely right that filthy monkeys cannot appreciate the vast scope of his awesomeness. For example, his incomprehensible magnificence used our ship's wimpy main maser cannon, which would take several shots to slice through a stick of butter, to shake the enemy ship apart. No, that isn't right. Our maser didn't output enough energy to shake even a small part of that ship. He did something even more awesome. He made the enemy ship shake itself apart. Physics is Skippy's bitch, baby. Way back in basic training, I learned that troops should never march in step across a bridge because the rhythmic impact of feet on the bridge deck just might match the natural frequency of the bridge's structure. It was unlikely that a marching platoon of soldiers could shake a bridge apart, but we could damage and weaken the bridge. And why take the chance? If you have ever seen video of an opera singer shattering a wine glass, that is what I'm talking about. The singer's voice matches the high-pitched natural resonance of the wine glass, and the effect builds on itself until the glass shatters. Another example is pushing a child on a swing. It takes a hard push to get going, but once the swing is in motion, a gentle shove at the right time can make that swing go really high, which is fun for the kid and frightening for the parent, but... Yes, yes, you, Professor Nerdnik in the back there with your hand up going, "Ooh, ooh, you're not exactly correct about that. I have a suggestion for what you can do with that hand. I'm trying to break it down Barney style for a Joe Bishop-level audience, okay? So shut up and let me talk." Skippy's mind-boggling awesomeness was demonstrated not only because he knows geeky stuff like the physics of resonance, because that would only have worked for the first half microsecond. The AI and the enemy ship would just have adjusted the structural stability field of the targeted frame and canceled the vibration, making our maser beam nothing more than wasted energy, like a microwave flashlight. Skippy's true genius is that he outsmarted a Maxulk's AI. He didn't just outsmart it, he spanked that thing and sent it to bed without any dinner. If the battle had been a chess match, Skippy would have left an envelope with all his planned moves and all the moves his opponent would make, and he would not have to waste his time actually playing the game. Somehow, after only a few seconds of observing that AI in action, he programmed a model to anticipate exactly how that AI thought, and once he had the model fine-tuned, he knew precisely how it was going to react even before it made the decision. Before that AI adjusted the structural integrity field, Skippy had already retuned our maser to match what the resonance frequency would be after the enemy AI acted. Getting into the head of that AI was not the only magic Skippy performed. As that ship zipped past us in the blink of an eye, his sensors scanned it and he created a virtual model of the ship down to the molecular level. He understood exactly how that ship was put together, its strengths and weaknesses, and most importantly, how it all connected. As the resonance traveled deeper into and farther back along the ship's internal structure, he adjusted the pulsation of the maser cannon's exciters, keeping the resonance in the enemy ship going and feeding it so the deadly effect built on itself. All that, of course, he told me about after we saw the Maxulk ship suddenly and unexpectedly explode into subatomic particles, shortly after our wimpy maser beam struck what looked like an unimportant area of that ship. When I saw that blessed event, I had my mouth open, about to demand why Skippy wanted Sims to fire the maser. My first thought was the explosion had to be a divine miracle. Then I figured somehow the universe had cashed in all my remaining karma chips for me. Then I thought maybe we got lucky, and that ship simply exploded due to damage we caused with our wormhole trap. We did not need divine intervention, karma, or luck. We had Skippy the Magnificent. "Skippy," I sat back in the command chair after he finished explaining. "How the hell did you do that?" Did you hear nothing I said? I said... "No, wait," he muttered disgustedly. "Stupid monkey heard me. He didn't understand any of it. Okay, let me try again. The maser... Yeah, no, I understand what you did. Close enough. Let me rephrase my question. How the hell did you do that?" Technically, he answered slowly. Colonel Sims fired the Mazer, and I...
You are missing my point. You had a monkey brain idea. You!
How did that happen?
Oh, that. You know what, Joe? I truly do not know, he admitted, his voice full of wonderment. It just suddenly popped into my head. There wasn't a process. It wasn't like I logically ran through a data set of tactical possibilities and narrowed down a list of... Anyway, I was thinking we could not use the Mazer to harm that ship because of its tough armor plating. Then I looked at areas where there were holes in the plating, and I was disappointed to discover nothing vital under those exposed sections. Then, my mind kind of wandered, and I was wishing there was a way for the Mazer beam to curve so it could go into a gap in the plating, then bend to hit something vital. Then, I kind of daydreamed. I was thinking that after the Maxalks destroy the Flying Dutchman, I will be floating out here forever without you. And that made me very sad.
We would miss you too, Skippy.
Huh? Yeah. What I really meant is I was thinking the extinction of humanity would mean I never got to try a sandwich.
Even knowing Skippy, that surprised me. The only reason he would care that humanity had been wiped out was because he couldn't get a decent lunch? A freaking sandwich?
Yeah. I've never tasted a sandwich, Joe, but I have seen you practically giddy when you are making one, and I would like to experience that some day.
A good sandwich can be an amazing thing. I could not argue with him about that.
How are you gonna...
Forget it. Daydreaming about a sandwich gave you a monkey brain idea?
No, Joe. Not thinking about the problem gave me the idea. I was running through a list of sandwiches you have made. I don't count hot dogs as a sandwich. Trying to rank them in order of potential scrumptiousness, while I guess my subconsciousness was working away on how to destroy the enemy ship with the puny weapons we have. I remember wishing there were a way for the Mazer energy to do something useful, and bingo! The idea popped into my head.
It is amazing, really. Of course, the first shot took out that particle cannon that was about to come back online. I could not allow the enemy to hit our one Mazer cannon, or my brilliant idea would have been for nothing.
Skippy, your awesomeness truly is almost more than the universe can stand. I mean that for real, homeboy.
Oh, why, thank you, Joe. You deserve way more praise than this poor monkey can give.
Hey, since you knew that enemy AI inside and out, what do you think was the last thing that went through its mind before the ship turned into a cloud of plasma?
Since that AI substrate was housed in the middle of the ship, the last thing to go through its mind... was part of a reactor.
He snorted at his own joke, and I laughed with him. Hey, praise and all that is nice, but monkey brain ideas are supposed to be your job, Joe. You don't do anything else that is useful around here. Why didn't you think of making that ship vibrate itself apart?
Because I didn't know that was possible.
Because?
Well, I guess it's because I don't know much about physics.
Because?
He stretched the word out. Enjoying himself.
Because, I sighed and said what he wanted to hear, which was also the absolute truth.
Even for a monkey, I am a dum-dum.
Exactly!
Are you happy now?
I will be happy after you wallow in your misery for a while, berating yourself for being a moron, until your self-loathing becomes so awful that you regret ever being...
Don't worry about that, I'm there already. I admitted the truth.
So... tell me, O most magnificent one, can we count on more monkey brain ideas from you in the future?
I don't know, Joe.
What do you mean you don't know? You just did it. Duh.
I do not know how I did it. Double duh.
Until I figure out how you do it all the freaking time, I can't be confident that a brilliant idea will pop into my head at the right moment.
Okay. Anyway, props to you. That was truly awesome.
You know what would be great, Joe? If you and the crew celebrated my awesomeness in an appropriate fashion.
Sure, like what?
I don't know, surprise me. Like, you could compose and perform an epic opera about me and my awesomeness.
Yeah, that is never gonna happen.
Hey, I snapped my fingers. How about we sing your theme song for you?
I have a theme song? He asked, flabbergasted.
Sure, you know.
And I launched into singing, or as close to singing as I could manage.
Sims joined in from the CIC, tears of laughter running down her cheeks.
Skippity-doo-dah, skippity-dole, my oh my, he is such an asshole.
Nothing but arrogance coming from him. Skippity-doo-dah, skippity-dim. Not funny, Joe, he shouted to drown me out, but he couldn't stop me. The new crew was laughing. Laughing at Skippy. Asshole beer can on a starship. This is crap. It's actual. Nothing here is satisfactual. Skippity-doo-dah, skippity-dim. Wonderful monkeys, arrogant him. The ship jumped away 7 hours later, after Skippy's magical little elf bots completed essential emergency repairs. From that new position in the middle of dead interstellar space, we had a much-needed and well-deserved stand-down, while Skippy and Nagatha examined the ship bow to stern and began the slow process of fixing what they could. Skippy told me firmly that the ship needed to go back to Earth and be taken apart so he could finally perform heavy maintenance. I was nervous about the ship being defenseless in Earth orbit, but he insisted the repair work was not optional, and he might need access to Earth's industrial resources, crude as they were. Truthfully, Joe, I am not 100% certain I can fix everything that is busted aboard this ship. Some of the systems are so broke, Dick, we may have to disconnect them unless I can fabricate replacements.
Broke, Dick? I laughed.
Did I not use that slang term correctly? He asked, with a touch of anxiety. Skippy very much wanted to fit into the crew to be treated like a person and not a super-intelligent beer can. Using slang was his way of trying to be one of the cool kids.
Yeah, you said the right thing. I never heard you say that before.
The new SEALs team uses that term a lot, he explained.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Because the Flying Dutchman was not supposed to leave Earth when we stole it, the ship was missing a lot of important gear. For example, many of our precious Krystang-powered armor suits were on Earth. We had to make do with the gear we had, and the situation was decidedly unset. To get enough suits for the star team, Skippy's maintenance bots had to splice together mismatched parts. Smythe had suits that were fully combat-ready for everyone on his team, but those suits were reserved for combat. For training, the team had to settle for suits that did not fit properly, did not have full functionality, or suffered annoying glitches.
Okay, yeah, the ship is broke, Dick. But you rebuilt it at Newark from nothing but moon dust and happy thoughts, right?
Huh? No, dum-dum. Back then, the ship had plenty of spare parts, and the nanofabricator tanks weren't depleted. Even back then, it was a close thing. Remember? I had to turn part of the forward hull into a particle accelerator to make materials we needed.
Yeah, I do remember that. A big part of the ship was off limits until you could purge the radiation.
The problem now is a lack of spare parts?
The problem is a lack of everything, Joe. We ransacked the junkyard and the Roach Motel for all the gear I thought might be useful, and still we are dangerously thin on replacements for critical components.
We might be able to make some replacement parts at Earth, but your industrial base is too primitive to manufacture many of the items we need.
Ah, hell, Skippy, you should have thought of that way back when we captured this damn ship. The cargo holds had a bunch of Theranin stuff you said we didn't need, so we discarded all of it.
Hey, don't blame me. I never expected we would still be flying this ship around years later.
Really, I figured you monkeys would be lucky to survive a single freaking month.
I facepalmed myself and mumbled a reply.
Your confidence in us is truly inspiring, Skippy.
I do what I can, Joe.
Okay, give me the bad news.
After a debriefing about ship status that made my head hurt, I contacted our engineer physics expert Frank Muller for help. By then, it was clear he and Sims were a couple, and I was cool with that. No, I was not just cool about it, I was thrilled for Sims. She had never looked so happy, and I kind of had a soft spot in my heart for our logistics officer, who was now my second in command. It was great to see her smiling, to watch her face light up when she saw Frank walk into the galley. My only concern was the guy didn't dump her and break her heart when we got back to Earth. Somewhere along the way I mentioned that fear to Skippy, and he assured me they both seemed committed to their relationship.
Besides, Joe, you don't need to worry about it, he had added.
I don't, I remember asking.
No, if he hurts Jennifer...
There was a sound like gnashing of teeth.
There could be something unfortunate happening, if you know what I mean.
I should have reprimanded him for making that threat.
I didn't.
Anyway, Muller met me in the galley, which was pretty empty at that time of day. That explained the empty coffee pot, so I made a fresh pot and had a mug ready for him when he came in.
Thank you, Colonel. You wanted to talk with me?
Yeah, thanks for coming. I know you're busy. I need to learn about physics and stuff like that. Winging it and getting lucky isn't good enough anymore. My ignorance is a danger to the ship. I can't afford mistakes.
Muller cocked his head at me and replied in a fatherly manner.
Colonel, mistakes are inevitable because we're human. I find myself making every conceivable mistake at some point or another. That's why Take Two was invented. Out here, I waved a hand in the air. We can't count on a Take Two.
You want to learn about physics?
Okay. He sat back in his chair. We can have a conversation about that.
What kind of physics?
I waved a hand in a vague gesture.
Useful kind, I guessed.
Not like egghead string theory stuff, practical stuff.
Practical? I don't know, he sighed. Skippy tells me that a lot of the practical stuff, he made air quotes with his fingers, we think we know is wrong.
Okay, then how about stuff we are sure of, like physics we know because we can see it work? Like if I drop this pen, I picked up a pen that had been lying unused on my desk forever, and drop it. I released the writing instrument. It falls. The pen bounced off the deck and rolled to a corner.
Colonel, that is a bad example, he grimaced. On Earth, the pen would fall because of gravity. Here aboard the Flying Dutchman, there is an artificial field that mimics the effects of gravity, but it is not gravity, and the math is subtly different.
Ah, crap. Is there anything you can teach me?
Let me think. Would you be willing to start with studying some background info? I have a copy of Astrophysics for People in a Hurry by Neil deGrasse Tyson.
That made me frown. Was he dissing me? Is that like astrophysics for dummies?
Not quite, he assured me with a smile.
Okay, I'll try it. With our mission successfully complete, I wanted to get back to Earth soon. Maybe I would not have time to read a big, complicated book. If I get through that book, you will teach me more?
I'm willing to try.
Good. One question. Skippy tells me the language of physics is math. Is this going to involve a lot of hard math like algebra and calculus?
Oh!
He threw his head back and laughed.
You consider that to be hard math?
Maybe.
Colonel, there is one thing I am certain of.
What's that?
Well, he mimicked Skippy. You are not going to like this.